people. The Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis off for another day of broadcast insolence. And
what a day it is.
Yeah, it's quite a day. It's quite a day. I don't know. I don't know what to... I'm watching this at home, you know, this morning. Just trying to have a nice, normal day. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to watch a little... I'm gonna have my Cheerios and I'm watch a little summit, you know, with Putin and the President of the United States. And I figure, it's a Russian president and an American president. That's going to be a little... I know there's a lot of other context around this.
Sure.
But it's going to be a lot of diplomatic talk and maybe some strange looks at each other and a little bit of body language. You know, when I was eating my cornflakes and watching Gorbachev and Reagan, you know, I mean,
you should have done a smoothie today, bro. You can choke on cornflakes.
Well, that's true. But I mean, when I was a kid, I know, you know, my Frosted Flakes and watching Putin and Gorbachev.
Yeah.
I thought, well, that's the way you're supposed to do it. I guess I learned on that. and now I'm eating this Cheerio. So I actually choked on it and I was able to breathe through the hole in the Cheerio. That's how I survived it.
Oh, I'm happy.
You've definitely matured in breakfast options.
Yeah. Well, you got to do it. Yeah, the sugar's bad. You know, that's the
gotta cut down when you get to be a certain age on the sugars.
Too much sugar. Anyway, the point is, I'm watching, and I'm like, did he just say this?
Yes, I do. I hold both countries responsible. I think that the United States has been foolish. I think we've all been foolish. We should have had this dialogue a long time ago. A long time, frankly, before I got to office.
So he's saying that he holds both countries responsible for the Russians hacking the DNC computers and then releasing the emails.
And interfering with our elections.
Now, it appears, I was just watching, Chris Wallace has an interview coming up with Vladimir Putin that he did in the aftermath of this press availability today, this press conference. And that's going to be on Brett Baer's show coming up tonight at 5 o'clock in Chicago. And Brett's going to join us in a few minutes to talk about this.
Great.
Chris did ask Putin about about a lot of these things, and one of the issues that Chris Wallace says he asked Putin about was this idea that they stole these emails, and Putin says to him, "Well, I mean, it wasn't like we were making stuff up. We stole their actual emails. We didn't. Some patriotic Russians stole their emails. They weren't working for me. I didn't know anything about it. But these people may have been patriotic Russians who did this. They stole real emails. I mean, it wasn't like they were making up emails. So what were they supposed to do with them?" And it was like Chris Wallace then turns to him and goes, "So if they stole real money versus counterfeit money, there wouldn't be a difference there?"
That's
and Putin didn't
point.
Seem to like that. All right. And then I guess this may have been the moment for me that I got, I sort of chilled out.
All I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be, but I really do want to see the server.
And then he switched over to the server that the DNC wouldn't give up. But what a strange, strange way to put, you know, what he's doing here is putting Putin, a former head of a KGB arm, on equal footing with his own intelligence community, saying, well, he said he didn't do it. So, I respect my intelligence community, but he's saying he didn't do it.
This looking for a server is a red herring that I'm really surprised that the president, and I know the people at the FBI and the people in Dan Coats' office, who is a long-standing, long-serving American senator and twice a senator from Indiana, once a congressman, he is a very respected guy in Washington.
Well, he was forced to deliver a very forceful rebuke of his own president, saying, "You know, Mr.
Just
president,
now.
Yes, we do believe our U.S. intelligence community, and yes, Putin is lying about his interference and his known intelligence agents' interference in our election."
When the president said those words,
I know.
I have no reason to suspect Russia. I thought, what? That's all I could think of.
Well, he had an extremely strong and powerful denial, is what he said. Putin had an extremely strong and powerful denial.
Well, of course he's going to have a powerful denial, right? Did you rob that bank? No, I didn't rob the bank.
No.
All right, well, that's it. We're done. We're done here. I tell you, I got to go with you on this. I totally understand. Yeah. He says he didn't do it. He didn't do it. This is one way to clear the jails, I think, in America. Is just accept
denial.
Everybody who denies. You just go, okay, denied. All right, denied it. It's good enough. It's good enough by me. Denied it. That's it. He said he didn't do it. All right, Brett Baer joins us from the Fox News Channel right now. And Brett, there is, you're going to have a show today, my friend. Oh, are you going to have a show?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Let's just start with this. Chris Wallace sat down with Vladimir Putin. And right after this press conference that the president and Putin had earlier today, and Chris Wallace, you know, of all the folks to sit down with in American journalism, Chris Wallace is in the top five people I do not want to,
if you ever did something wrong, you don't want to face Chris Wallace.
I don't want to be sitting there trying to answer questions from him. And at one point, I heard Chris talking about this a little bit earlier, he actually tried to hand Putin the indictment from the special counsel's office, from the Justice Department, we should say, actually, because it's Rod Rosenstein who announced it. Mm-hmm. So the Justice Department indictment of these 12 Russians, and Putin wouldn't touch it.
Yeah, he actually started that way. So it kind of starts with a bang. And the interview is spectacular. It is fiery at sometimes. It is, there's a whole bunch of topics covered. We're going to run it in its entirety without commercial break. And it's one to watch because, you know, this is right after this summit and this press conference that really has people scratching their heads up on Capitol Hill, Republicans and Democrats. And I think you're going to get a lot out of this interview.
One of the things, Brett, that I'm seeing people tweet about, at least this interview certainly is making an impact just from the pieces that have been released or maybe just what Chris Wallace is talking about already.
Yeah, we haven't put anything out yet.
Nothing. It's just him talking about it on your air, I guess. We engaged, we argued, I interrupted, and he scolded me. Putin scolded me. So he really gets fiery and maybe even gets him angry, I suppose?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you can imagine. He doesn't do a lot of those interviews where people interrupt him.
I would imagine, right.
And so...
Yeah, without something bad happening, you know.
Another thing
something,
he said...
Yeah, right. I don't think Chris is going to Moscow anytime soon, or he's going to check his coffee or something.
Yeah.
Why do so many people in and around you end up dead with something else that was asked of him?
Oh, my God.
That's true.
Yeah.
And that is true. I mean, a lot of journalists, political opponents, mysteriously have problems in Russia or elsewhere.
They have balance issues in parking garages and places like that. We're in a very strange moment. I'd like to get your perspective on this because you're a guy, you're not only a reporter and an anchor, but you know, you've written a number of books now, two specifically about great moments in America, or interesting moments, transitional moments in American history. And, you know, one of them was, you know, about Eisenhower, the Eisenhower to Kennedy transition. And to me, there's a fascinating moment here because the New World Order had been established specifically by Dwight Eisenhower, was one of the guys who did it, right? To create the post-World War II balance between Europe and North America against imperialist Russia, essentially. It was, you know, Soviet Russia. And so... That seems to me today that's all over.
Yeah, I mean, we're in a different place. Vladimir Putin is much closer to Nikita Khrushchev than he is to Mikhail Gorbachev. And he is much more into exerting power throughout the region, much more into kind of the old days of the Soviet Union. And I think that... you're seeing him try to... This was a huge win for Putin today. Huge. Because he wants to be seen on the same level as the U.S. And in this particular instance, it seemed like the president was deferring to him. Now, the Trump people will tell you that he was trying to create a good atmosphere so the communication can continue and they can get stuff out of him, like help on Syria and Iran and other things, North Korea and China. But the opponents and critics of the administration will say that we, you know, looked weak in the worldview, and they'll, you know, they go as far as to say there's more here, but I guess you're going to hear that from Democrats.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's just take that off the table for a second here. We don't even have to go down a conspiracy lane here. We could just stop with what we saw today and say that this is unusual behavior for an American president. This is unusual behavior for the man in charge of the world's largest economy and the strongest military. And I know people are saying, well, it's very important. I know in the administration I said, you know, Russia, you know, there's 11 time zones in Russia. It's a big, important place. It's big. There's no question about that. It's a large landmass.
Sure.
But it
has nuclear power.
Its economy is 10% the economy of the United States of America. Its military is very small by comparison in terms of manpower, technology, and armament. It is small compared to the United States. And in terms of nuclear capability, it doesn't have what we have. They are not the United States. They're not on the same, they're not on the same stage. China is a much more sophisticated adversary, and the European Union is a far more sophisticated partner to us. I don't understand this. I want to get a sense. I know you're a reporter, and this is not about you. But this is a stunning moment. Is it not a stunning moment?
And it's a stunning moment, and you're going to see it tonight in this exchange with Chris, talking about this. But for our president to stand now twice with nations that, you know, we're kind of swinging below the belt here, really, if you look at it just by the economics of it, Russia, North Korea, just by having those moments, you're changing the dynamic. You're lifting them up, right? Now, if you're getting something for it and it's definitive and you come off and you get, you know, point A, B, C, and you get North Korea to denuclearize or you get Russia to get Iran out of Syria, that's a win. So far, we don't know what the wins are for American interests.
Here's a little moment in this today that I thought was interesting. I don't think we have this cut, but I do remember Putin sort of defending Iran. That was a weird moment for me. Putin saying that the Iran deal that we walked away from was a good deal.
Yeah.
And now, how does that fit into all? Let's just talk about that for a second. Because if what the White House is saying is, well, we did this because we want to get a better deal with Iran, Putin said we shouldn't have walked away. Are we going to walk back into that deal?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the president's he's out. But that was one of the interesting, pushback moments of Putin and Trump in that press conference. The president clearly mentioned the meddling in the election. He clearly talked about that. He talked about Syria and what they wanted Russia to do. But his tangible wins, not sure, other than that we'll continue the talk.
Do you think that the president thinks he has some cleaning up to do? He just tweeted 45 minutes ago saying, I have great confidence in my intelligence people, even though it appeared to everyone listening that he was putting their results of his own U.S. intelligence officers on equal footing with Putin's forceful pushback. And then you see Rudy Giuliani now taken to the airwaves in print saying, I don't know what we would have accomplished if he simply went out there and said, Putin's a liar, Putin did it, we don't, you know, to call him those words that... It just seems as if they are sort of trying to make it better.
90% they are doing a cleanup on aisle five. And, you know, when you see those tweets come out, he's on Air Force One flying back. He's looking at all the coverage. They know they have something to do. They've got Dan Coats, the director of national intelligence, putting out a statement that they stick by, that Russia was behind the meddling or are concerned about meddling in the midterm elections. I mean, that is exactly what the intelligence community said. And in the press conference, obviously the president kind of gave this moral equivalence that I like my U.S. intelligence agencies, but he had a strong denial. So both parties, you know, are right. You know, and it was just kind of surreal.
Yeah, but they're not.
Yeah.
But they're not.
Talking about
they're not.
Putin.
And you know what? And Chris Wallace, God bless Chris Wallace right now. So very few times I've ever said that, Brett. But God bless Chris Wallace.
Cause I can't wait for his interview.
At least he claims that what we understand is going to come up in your interview coming up at 5 o'clock Chicago time on the Fox News channel is this. That, yes, he did ask. He did. Chris Wallace pushed back on Putin about that and about, you know, the stealing. Was this stealing and you know, where these patriotic Russians are working for him. So we'll can't wait to see what you're doing there. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brett.
You bet.
Thanks. Right there. Ben Bradley joins us right now from the Channel 9 newsroom.
And, I know exactly where I am.
Good.
At all times.
Do you know who you are?
We can see you.
Good.
We can see you, Ben Bradley.
I see you too, bro, which is a miracle on radio.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little creepy, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, let's have a little conversation here about a couple of different things here. First of all, this just breaking, you know, you have an indictment of a Russian national now. In D.C., who was posing as the Chicago Daily News? Is that right? Do I have that right?
Yeah,
I don't know if she has the direct connections. You're talking about the woman.
Right. Well, so the Chicago Daily News angle came out a couple of days ago in that indictment of those Russian military intelligence officials. And in there was some fascinating details about the social media campaign that the Russians used to try to, you know, influence people's social media feeds and then influence, obviously, their opinions. And you kind of wonder, how do they do it? Oh, is it just, you know, do they act like they're Joe Schmo from, you know, Wichita, Kansas? Well, in one instance, they resurrected the former Chicago Daily News, turning it into a Twitter feed.
They did something that a lot of media barons were not able to do over the last number of decades.
Exactly.
And they had thousands of followers at some point.
I can tell you, I don't remember what stories, but I saw a couple of Chicago Daily News items pop in my Twitter feed over the last couple of years, because I remember thinking, oh, neat, somebody must have bought the handle or is using it. It's kind of a nice.
That's the Russians.
Yeah. Who knew?
Yeah, no problem.
Who knew it was Boris?
No.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
But they were posting headlines and acting as if they were a Chicago-based news agency, and they were running it out of Russia.
Should have known when they started talking about Al's Beef and Pizzeria Uno that they weren't locals.
Yeah, that's right. That might be true. Although Al's, people can talk about Al's.
You certainly can.
Yeah, Pizzeria Uno definitely is for the people who are coming in from out of town.
It's a visitor.
And the many people who wander up and down Ontario Street staring.
I love the Hard Rock Cafe on Ontario Street.
The people who stay at the motel, I know, the Ohio House.
You know, that's popular.
I would imagine.
It's free parking.
Let me just say something. If I were a Russian spy coming in here to infiltrate American culture,
that's where you go?
I'd go to the Ohio House. Yep. Yeah, I'd stay there.
Because it just feels...
25 cent coffee.
Yeah. Oh. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so we have that. Now, also back here in Chicago, there was a significant story over the weekend of a police-involved shooting and death as a result of that police-involved shooting. And now we're getting more details about that.
Yeah, fascinating, isn't it? The Chicago police took the unprecedented step in lightning fast speed of releasing the body cam footage. In the 20 years or so I've been reporting here, I have never seen the police department release video this quickly of an incident.
Generally, it takes about 2 years.
Usually they wait, charges are pending, sometimes a trial, they won't release it. I mean, you're
they've
right.
They've always argued for years that, that would influence, the outcome of a trial, or it would unfairly influence the investigative process into the officer's actions. But obviously the police department felt like, in this incident, it showed not only how quickly situations can develop with police officers in the public, but obviously the police brass thought this showed their officers did the right thing. How you see this video certainly depends on your perspective, though, and that is, there
guy does clearly reach for a gun, though.
Yeah, and you saw how quickly it developed, right? One officer had just stopped and was talking to this guy in the street after noticing the bulge on the side of his waistband, and he had his wallet out. According to a police source that I spoke with, how the incident went down was the officer was talking to this guy, and he claimed to have a concealed carry permit, and they said, well, let's see it. And he's kind of going through his wallet. Oh, it's not here. Maybe it's here. Hold on. And at some point there, the other officer, the female officer, takes the guy's hand to begin the process of cuffing him. And that's when he flails his arms and rushes into the street toward another police
car. Takes off.
And you see him, in fact, reaching for his waistband.
You see him turn around and reach for the gun on with his right hand that's placed on his right kidney, essentially.
But the swift release of the video, is it partly, were you aware of what happened over the weekend? I didn't follow every story, but it seemed as if there were a lot of witnesses who were saying, or people who were included in news reports saying that he didn't have a gun and he didn't reach for the gun, and then the video.
You get those types of mixed accounts from every police shooting that you cover, especially one. This is a very busy area. There's a Walgreens, the South Shore neighborhood. There are a lot of people around at this time, and everybody who kind of witnesses either an altercation like itself or the immediate aftermath, accounts begin to fly through the crowd like wildfire.
Right.
And what people are saying that they know to be fact is in fact something that they heard. So police trying to get ahead of this narrative, they said that's one of the reasons why that they put this video out so quickly.
Yeah.
The question longer term becomes, what happens if in future instances when the video shows cops may not have been in the right? Or what happens when video doesn't support the early officers' statements about what happened. Police still going to release the video within 24 hours?
Right. You wonder.
Right. Well, I think that answers it itself, Vladimir. I think that's what we have to deal with, though, is this at this moment. And there was obviously a huge reaction to this, an emotional reaction to it. A lot of people taken to the streets and a lot of misinformation. And this is, I hate to bring it back to this, but this is true. You know, we do know that the Russians got involved in Ferguson, Missouri, right? They created fake Facebook groups that were both
fanning the flames
on both sides, right? Like an anti-white group and then an anti-black group, and they were in there trying to get people to fight with each other, and so that's clearly what's happening here.
Yes,
and to me, we're doing it to ourselves.
We are
doing this. What we have done in America, just writ large here, we have done in America is our fault. And we can't just sit there and blame the world on Donald Trump or Vladimir Putin. We're playing into this because we are allowing our emotions to be played by those who wish to play it for political purposes. And that's what's happening to us.
We've become pawns in this game.
Yes. Mongo, just pawn in Game of Life, Ben.
There you go. Hey, did you catch the other Chicago angle from the Trump-Putin press conference today?
Oh, no.
And that was, President Trump said that Putin had said, maybe we'll let your intelligence officials talk to those Russian operatives that you want to speak to if you let us talk to people we want to talk to in your country who we think have done wrong. And Putin specifically mentioned by name Bill Browder, who was born in Chicago, graduated from the University of Chicago with a degree in economics, went on to a successful career in international business. He was kind of one of the early people that was involved in a lot of deals in Russia. And Browder has become persona non grata for exposing a lot of Russian corruption and, in fact, is the person behind the Magnitsky Act, which led to a lot of sanctions and a lot of freezing of assets, of foreign assets, of Russian oligarchs, a lot of Putin's friends. And so it was interesting, I thought, that Putin specifically is still wanting to go after Bill Browder. We've seen this over and over again.
And Bill Browder, and what he did to just get Trump all riled up Putin still, being the KGB operative that he is, he was brilliant in how he did this today. He said, they illegally funneled $400 million to Hillary Clinton, which is inaccurate and is a trope, and it's a way to make it seem like this Browder guy is part of the deep state and Hillary Clinton, when actually what he was doing was showing what he basically went to the U.S. government and said, we have a problem here with the way that these business folks are operating.
And I read Browder's book. It was not an easy sell early on. He had a tough time. He would literally go from congressman to congressman talking about what Russia was doing at the time under Putin. This was years ago. And he finally gets the Magnitsky Act passed. And all of a sudden, Russia puts him on Interpol lists. He's getting picked up. He was detained. He was detained just a couple of months ago traveling through an airport in Spain.
Yeah.
Because Russia had him on this list.
Yeah.
And so Putin's still going after him, even mentioned this Chicagoan's name today.
And the fact that the president in the press conference today said that Vladimir Putin has got a great idea here, and he'll tell you all about it, this idea that we send Mueller over to Moscow, like he's ever going to come back from there.
Yeah, right.
Right, and then
to an exchange program.
To watch an interrogation by GRU or FSB interrogators of their own guys, right? And then they come over here and they grab Browder and goodbye.
Yeah,
right.
Like that's gonna work.
That's why when people are so up in arms about this today, this so crazy. What has happened here today is so crazy that the president is suggesting that any of this made any kind of sense. It's even stunning Fox News Channel, except for Kimberly Guilfoyle, who's dating Donald Trump Jr., who called the president a genius for all of this
today. Strong leader.
She's the only one, really, who has said this.
So far.
I mean, it's like, it's even Brett Baer just told us this is stunning today. From Brett Baer himself.
Yeah, and you saw Neil Cavuto call it disgusting.
Yes. So, there's good reason for it today. Ben, thank you very much. You brought it all home. You got to go to work now, don't you? Turn around and go on the
news in about 7 minutes.
Yeah, you got to get over there. Get over to the news desk.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
See you, Ben.
Bye, Ben.
Bye, Ben.
He didn't say hello to you. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. Former White House Chief of Staff Bill Daley is going to step in the studio and talk to us about what he saw today happening in Helsinki, Finland. I did like how all of the people in all the assembled media talked about how beautiful Helsinki is and what a great operation this was. And everybody wanted to thank the Finnish president for incredible, luxurious accommodations and everything. Mm-hmm. And then the world ended. I don't know. This is it's kind of the way that this goes.
Not look so beautiful anymore.
Yeah, no. I think that this was a moment where, I think as Americans, we got to stop and think, uh-oh, really? Really? When the Fox News Channel starts to get a little panicky, that's when I stop and I get panicky. I mean, I'm already panicky.
Yes,
but,
to begin with.
Right.
But you would think if the president, when he got back on Air Force One, checked in with Fox News after that, he didn't necessarily hear what he normally hears, which is...
Adulation?
Yes. And so I wonder if that's why he issued that tweet reinforcing he has nothing but faith in the intelligence community. And we can't look at the past with Russia trying to sort of clean things up. But it's hard to after you heard what you heard today.
The Russians attacked us. I mean, there's no question about it. There isn't. They did. Vladimir Putin, as much, admitted to it in his interview with Chris Wallace, saying that it may not have been state actors. These might have been just patriotic Russians. Oh, and they might work for the government. Whatever. I don't know. But I had nothing to do with it. Okay. All right. Right.
Right.
And let's just assume, for the sake of argument, let's just assume that there was no known collusion between the principals of the Trump campaign, including his own family, and Russians in terms of calling shots and saying, hey, maybe you want to look at this and you should try this if you want to get in everybody's way. Oh, by the way, steal these emails and then release them when I get in trouble. That sort of thing. Now, that would be the conspiracy that everybody's looking for here criminally. Let's just assume that that didn't happen. But at the end of the day, the president does know and his family knows, his campaign folks know, that they did benefit from whatever it was the Russians were doing. And now we're getting a really good look at what it was that they were doing, who they were posing as and how they were doing it and the kinds of social media tricks that they were involved in. And then the idea, it's one thing to be involved in social media because, everybody kind of can do that and there aren't really rules about it. But going in and stealing emails and then releasing them piece by piece in the middle of a news cycle, now that's actually... you wouldn't want that if you were you wouldn't want them doing that to Donald Trump, right? And they could just as easily turn around and do it to him next. If they find somebody else they like better and they want to go with that person and they do it to Donald Trump, you wouldn't like that, right? So that's why we need to stop this now. That's why this is a moment that needs to be addressed. And we got to get them to not do this because if you have Dan Coats, the director of national intelligence, saying this, the red lights are blinking like they were before 9/11. That tells me that this isn't just about social media or necessarily stealing emails. This is about trying to hack the systems. And if they hack the systems and they change the votes, that becomes a problem. And this is not Democrats telling you this. These are Republicans in the Trump administration telling you this. This is something to be concerned and alarmed about. And then to turn around and have the president essentially played catch. He literally played catch with Vladimir Putin and Melania. At one point, there was a soccer ball that gets thrown up there, and he tosses and Putin throws it over to Trump, and Trump throws it over to Melania.
Right.
I mean,
he joked about Barron will be a big part of the World Cup when it comes to America.
Oh, my God. They won't be president then, though. They won't be. Well, maybe Barron will be president. Maybe he'll make Barron president.
Maybe.
Or Don Jr.
I don't know what he meant by that, but he did say it.
Well, if it's Don Jr., he won't talk to Barron, so that won't exactly work out. We'll have to figure it out. Then we have to change a few things in the Constitution. Maybe that's okay. We can have the Russians help us with that, maybe. That would be all right. I don't know, man. This was a really bad moment for America today. It really was. I'm sad to report it. I'm sorry to report it. I've been behind this or other microphones for some really... really proud moments in American history and some really dark moments in American history. And this day feels a lot to me like one of those really dark days, whether it's a mass shooting or September 11th or any of the kinds of things that have gone wrong, terrible disasters that have befallen us. This is a really hard day to do this reporting. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 yes. WGN. We are very, very pleased and proud to have the former chief of staff to the White House and Commerce Secretary, former Commerce Secretary Bill Daley in the studio with us. And, well, I don't know, your reaction to the press conference today between the president and Vladimir Putin?
You know, it isn't surprising, even though we're stunned by it and even though we're shocked by it. If you just listen to what Donald Trump has said for the last 4 years since he got into this thing, and many years before that, he has a perception about the Russians and about the role of the United States in the world that's very different than any other leader, any other president since World War II. And he doesn't care what people think. And watching him today was not only embarrassing, it's rather frightening.
You're seeing some powerful Republicans step up and say this is not okay, what we saw. Right. You saw Dan Coats, Director of National Security, say the Russians absolutely did meddle with the election. The president needs to hear that, I would think, and this it isn't refutable.
No, but Dan Coats evidence. Should, if he feels as strongly as his statement and has been repudiated, and the men and women of his agency have been repudiated, why would he stay working for this guy?
Okay, let me ask you that, though. I mean, I thought exactly that, too, about a lot of the folks here, right? You saw Gary Cohen leave. You've seen other people leave. Interestingly enough, Wilbur Ross has gotten the poop kicked out of him a couple of times, and yet he still is ticking. I think that I'm going to take Wilbur out of this for the moment, but I think that the people who have stepped aside figure that there will be other competent people that will come in. I think a guy like Dan Coats, who has, I'm sure you know him and knew when he was senator, right, from Indiana. If I were him, I'd be worried about who they would choose to replace me. I think Rod Rosenstein feels the same way. I think a lot of the people who... you know, they're the ones holding on. I think John Kelly, chief of staff, feels the same way. As a former chief of staff, what is your thought about that?
Well, then you're really, if we believe that this is all of these people, all good people, John Kelly, I know Senator Coates not well, but I know him. He had a good reputation when he was in the Senate. He was viewed as sort of a politician when he was put in that job, which has been historically a less political, more career person.
Right.
But if we're at the point where these people are basically trying to protect the nation from our president, if they really believe that, then they better think of some other alternatives if it is that bad and if they're at that
so point. So step aside, the alternative being step aside and then come out and publicly talk about it.
Yeah. And say, we are in a crisis and action has to be taken because this president is not protecting the interests of the nation. If the head of the DNI was to do that, and look, at I fully appreciate the horror that this could create for the country. But, you know, at some point, you've got to put the country ahead of even your individual, maybe like for Trump, or your loyalty to that agency, but you've got to put the nation ahead of it. And I think we're getting very close to that point. This, not only today's press conference, but the week of trashing our allies, calling the Europeans our foes. These are people who have been the most loyal to us in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Vietnam, all over for 80 years since the Second World War. Right. We helped save them, and their strength has had added to our strength economically. All these people running around saying, what a great economy we have, and we do. Our partnerships around the world have helped create that. It's not just us.
Right.
That's a lot of BS.
And it seems like a page out of Putin's playbook to try to divide us from our Western Europe allies. Right. Do you think the trade, what's going on with trade being actively involved in that in the past, do you think that this is going, is it repairable? Are we going to, is it going to end badly? Are you optimistic?
I'm not optimistic at all about things right now in this country. Yes, fine. Our economy is very strong. The tax cut was great. Those of us who have money are making more money. And the corporations are doing great. And they're buying stock buybacks. And they're giving out dividends. And all that's great. Is there great expansion and investment in small and medium-sized businesses? No, you're not seeing that.
There's an aggregation to the mega here.
Yes, yes.
For sure.
It's, and, you know, that's what the tax bill was about. Yes. And I'm not saying we shouldn't lower corporate rates, because we do have an unfair system around the world. But at a point that we are today, I just have enormous worry about where this country is going under this leadership.
About Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
Clearly, you know, in your jobs in Washington, you're familiar with Russia. Is Vladimir Putin a danger to the United States, do you think?
Absolutely. No question about it. He has the second largest nuclear arsenal. They have had that. Mm-hmm. It is a one-man authoritarian nation. He is out stirring the pot. Not only did they actively, aggressively get involved in our election, but most people believe they did that with Brexit, and they're doing it in other elections in Europe.
Turkey.
They obviously caused chaos in Ukraine, invaded Crimea. They're throughout the world.
The first land invasion in Europe, theoretically, since World War II.
Right. And we did nothing.
Yeah.
And the world didn't do anything. And so, okay, we accept.
Okay, so now that's on the Obama administration,
yeah,
is it not?
Yeah. Everyone was at fault. Now, Ukraine is not in NATO. But what if he was to take action in Lithuania or Estonia or others?
Georgia.
Do we really think that Donald Trump would take action and respond? I don't think so. After that press conference today, who knows what the two of them talked about alone, which is unprecedented.
Okay, let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. You, as chief of staff, you certainly were a part of high-level meetings between heads of state. In your knowledge of it, being a chief of staff and of the history of the presidency in the post-World War II era, has that ever happened before?
There's been a couple of occasions where, like, Reagan and Gorbachev walked in the garden for a half hour sort of thing, just them with interpreters. But to telegraph early on...
With people with their cameras on them.
Yes. An hour and a half, just the two of them with the interpreters. And I'll bet you there is no transcript from the U.S. interpreter about what was said.
You best believe there's a recording that the Russians have.
Oh, yeah, they have a recording. But who knows what was said? And my opinion is it was either... For one of two, I think Trump loves this authoritarian guy. He loves to be totally in charge. What he did to the agencies of the U.S. government, the Justice Department, CIA, intelligence, even the special counsel, that isn't a fluke of an appointment. These are serious people. You may not agree with them, but to denigrate institutions of the government he leads and has survived for so long with respect is just mind-boggling. Putin could not have gotten more out of this. It's much worse than even Kim Jong-un, which was just a joke. That was strictly a photo op.
It doesn't turn out that meeting really has borne the kind of advance that we thought it was going to.
Oh, remember he tweeted and said everyone should sleep well tonight.
Yeah, it's all fine. It's over.
He got rid of all his nuclear weapons. Nothing's happened. It's a joke. Putin is a different animal.
Right.
First of all, he's cagey. He's KGB.
Yeah.
He's cagey. Yeah. He's smart.
Yeah.
Unlike President Trump, to be frank with you, he knows what he's doing. He's got a game plan.
Okay, so to that point, there was a preparation here. It was really interesting to me how there was all of this discussion about how we would say, when the president said in this press conference today, Vladimir Putin has a really good idea of how to handle this in terms of you know, extraditing the 12 indicted Russian officials.
And now you're thinking, what?
Right now, I thought, okay, I can't wait to hear it because it will hit. And he'll explain to you in a few minutes. Don't worry about it. Go ahead, Vlad. Go ahead. And then when he explains that Mueller can go over to Russia and watch the Russians interrogate their own guys and take notes and then come back.
Uh-huh.
And then he gets to come here and he wants to take out this former Chicagoan, this Browder guy, right? And who was the guy who turned in Russian oligarchs for trying to steal in the United States of America, which led to the Magnitsky Act, which was literally taking those guys' assets, those Russian assets in the United States, and sequestering them, so they didn't have access to them. That's what that is all about. And the reason that the Russians came to meet with Donald Trump Jr. and all those people at the Trump Tower in June of 2016 was because they said it was about Russian adoption, because what Vladimir Putin did was say, if you do the Magnitsky Act, we're not going to sell you white babies. That is literally what Vladimir Putin said to the United States. He said this to the Obama administration. He said, here's your problem. The Americans are coming over here, especially middle-aged Americans who want to adopt children, and they're primarily white. They want to get Russian kids because they will look like them, because they can't get them in the United States. You're 40, you cannot get an American kid.
It's difficult.
And so they said, we're going to just stop. He wanted to put pressure on, you know, wealthy, upper-middle-class, powerful Americans who might say, oh, well, you know, my daughter's having trouble having a baby, so we're going to go over to Russia and get a baby. That was the beginning of that conversation. But what it really was about was opening up that money so that those oligarchs could get their money back. And they wanted Donald Trump Jr. to say, hey, when my dad's president, we'll get you your money back. That's what they were there for. And they said it was about adoption, but that's not really the issue. And it's so unbelievable to me that I sit here today and I watch this thing happen and Donald Trump Sr. turn and say, that's okay, this is a good idea. First of all, what is a good idea?
Well, does anyone think, I mean, first of all, it's laughable, but does anyone think that why Putin put that on the table was he wants to know how the heck did Mueller and his team put this together back to the named individuals working in the GRU?
Right.
Okay?
Right.
That is an unbelievably sophisticated operation that in a trial, much of it would come out, but much of it is highly secret. It has to be.
Right.
But that is an incredible package that they put together on, by name, the individuals, and they trace them back. It's a story, too, that anybody who thinks they're online and they can't get caught.
Right. Guess what? Yeah. There's always a trail. But they'll never be extradited. They'll never face trial. I mean,
Mueller's going to Moscow in absentia.
He could try him in absentia, which would be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But then there would be this argument about giving up all the secrets about how we got it. I don't think it'll ever happen. But all right. Well, Bill Daly, thank you very much.
Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mater and Joe Donlan weeknights on WGN TV News at 9.
It's our guy, Joe Donlan.
It's your boy.
It's our boy. No big deal.
I played golf with him once for almost 18 holes.
Yeah, right. Maybe for like 9 before he left. No big deal.
Right. He likes you a lot.
As far as we know, Skilling doesn't even want to bring it up to him anymore.
No.
Like, hey, how's that? Hey, how's that going?
Tell Joe Donlan that Rowan Cav, his golf
buddy. He's always
got
a thing, Tom. I called him a few times this week, and he had things, so that's fine. We'll hook up eventually soon.
Busy guy.
Yeah.
Who's this, Joe?
Yeah.
Joe Donlan.
Our new best friend.
Yeah. Was he playing golf with you? Or
yeah.
A while back when they became BFS, but they haven't really heard from him since. It's just weird.
I see.
We were doing a Jared Payton's thing.
That's
big,
right.
You know,
I saw that.
Yeah, right.
He's busy, though.
We just clicked right off the bat.
Yeah,
we're best friends with him now.
Principal anchor.
Yep. Friendship bracelets, the whole thing.
You
they really
see
got
him
into
break
it.
Dancing over here. I mean, this guy is in fantastic shape. Makes me tired just to see the picture.
I know. He's a lovely guy and is really good at what he does. Hey, by the way, Tom Skilling, we should mention, brought to you by PermaSeal Basement Systems. All right.
Yes.
Did you see this? Now, you just got back from the Kilauea volcano.
And you know what? I know what you're going to talk about. Go ahead, Ro.
So you just got back from Hawaii, and you did a story about the Kilauea volcano, and which was an exciting thing. I'm trying to get there before this whole thing stops, too.
I know.
Because I'm just fascinated by this. And there was, within the last, today or so, there was a lava bomb that flew out of this thing and hit a boat.
And that was the same outfit that I went out with, and it was the same boat, very possibly.
Oh, my God.
And you know what's amazing is that was operated by a native Hawaiian company, and they got us close. There's no question about it. And, there was a huge explosion. A little island is formed right off of this lava flow into the ocean. And they think what happens is the lava's been going under the ocean, but it finally emerged on top. But apparently there was some kind of explosion, and it's been captured. Somebody actually videotaped it, and it was mean. And apparently somebody was critically injured, and 22 were injured. And I'm not surprised, because I'll tell you, the water that would splash over the boat, we were within a couple hundred yards of the molten lava from mm-hmm. which this acidic gas cloud was emanating.
Okay.
And when the water washed over, it was like warm bathtub water. That's how close we were.
Oh, wow.
And I kept thinking, if this thing goes over, what do? You can't swim and right. and shore yourself on molten lava. So, you know, what do we do?
Unless you want to wait 1,000 years, yeah. you might be able to walk across it.
Well, yeah. If you see the hole that it tore in the roof of this tourist boat,
well, they say,
the lava bomb, it's amazing.
And one of those things, they say, can weigh as much as a refrigerator. Remember, there was a guy who was up trying to put out fires on his roof. That was hit by one of these things a couple months ago over there, not far in one of the homes close to the area. And there are homes right up against this area where this Fisher 8, as it's called. It's one of the openings around Kilauea. That's the one spewing out most of the lava. And then there's an 8-mile river of lava that goes down to the ocean. And where this explosion occurred apparently yesterday was right by the point where this lava makes contact with the ocean. The lava itself is about 2,100 degrees. And there are bubbles that come up, the splashes. And these things can weigh as much as a refrigerator.
Oh,
and, of course, they're molten hot. So, you know, you're talking about serious stuff there. What'll be interesting to see is if they put real restrictions on, you know, how close these boats can get.
They're funny, though. You know, I know Hawaii is the United States of America, and there are some rules that apply, or that should apply. But Hawaii is very much it's a very independent place, and it's wild in a lot of places. And it is, and when you go to other places around the world, especially in the Americas, you go to, you know, Central America or South America, sometimes there's just no rules that apply. You know, they take you right up to an alligator, right?
Yeah, sure, whatever you want. Pay for it, get it.
Right, what do you want to do?
We're going to shark dive for great whites. Yeah. No problem.
I'll tell you something, though. It is interesting. They do enforce some of these rules, like the helicopter pilots, and most of these guys are ex-military.
Right.
These guys know what they're doing, and they tell you, and they abide by these rules to the letter of the law.
Sure.
That you can't fly over, you know, under 3,000 feet anywhere near this, and you certainly can't go over the thing because they were afraid of these explosives.
Well, also the air is so hot. You can't, in a helicopter especially, you might be able to lose your ability to stay in the air.
That's true.
There, and that becomes its own, you know, thermals. They have it's a really unique circumstance. It's like putting your hand over a hot flame.
It is.
To me, it's just, you know, in the geological stories of the world right now, that is the most fascinating place.
It really is.
Did you guys were you with a scientific tour or
you had to drive. I drove an hour and a half from where I was staying on the north end of the island down to Hilo, and then you board one of these things at 3:30 in the morning. The thing is bathed in this blue light because it's totally dark at that point. So you get in there, and I was next to a German family. There were Australians there and their kids. And
did you have a crew with you, or are you just doing this your own video?
No, there was a crew. Oh, you mean a video crew? No, it was me. Me and my telephone, and then a bucket to handle what happened when you rocked around in the water all the time. They had a whole stack, and they warned you before you went out. Many of you are going to get seasick.
Oh, yeah.
And we did. So, you know, you
are you sensitive like that to those things? Oh, yeah.
I found that. Well, I knew I was, but you wouldn't believe we were rocking and rolling. I mean, we must have had 12-foot seas and 30-knot winds.
I don't get seasick or motion sickness generally, but the only time I ever came close was on a fishing boat in the Keys.
It's so hot.
Because what you do is you stop.
Yeah.
When you stop, that's when all hell breaks loose. Because if you can still be moving forward, you go, wow, if I can still move forward,
fine.
I'll be okay.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Dear God.
Everybody has a cure for it. Of course, take your Dramamine, which doesn't work. But they tell you to eat crackers before
drowsy.
You go, and then another, the other one is eat a full steak.
Right? Don't eat a lot. Don't eat anything. Drink a lot of water. Don't drink anything.
The hardest part for me was the only time when I really got sick was from Cancun to Cozumel, because one by one, each person on this 200-person boat, and like you can't hear that. It's almost like a yawn. You have to. It's contagious.
It really is.
Oh, you know what? It's making me sick now.
All right,
thank you very much, Tom. All right, what do we got coming up here?
Cooler, less humid weather. Beautiful weather. Humidity's back Thursday with some thunderstorms.
Okay.
But
so
nice
Tuesday, Wednesday night.
Yeah,
because it was steamy. Today.
It was hot.
Oh my God!
15th day, 90 and above at O'Hare. 17th at Midway. 8's normal. By the way, we looked at summers that have produced this number of 90s plus.
Yeah.
Since then, Bill Snyder dug through the records.
Yep.
Turns out the average year there'll be 18 more on average if this year is like the 10 others we found that.
I don't mind this except for the humidity today.
Yeah.
I sweated all the way through my suit.
You don't.
I arrived at work earlier.
It'll
today,
be better.
And it was like my suit changed colors.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was bad.
Under the armpits.
Yeah, the whole thing. Ugh. Well, what I did the under the armpits one, so I just doused myself in water to make the thing. To get on TV to make
How
the thing one color.
You know, this makes my after. Doesn't it yours, Anna?
Yes, yeah. I like hearing these stories.
What are you going to do?
Happy somehow.
What are you going to do?
There's nothing you can do. I know.
I had Bonnie Hunt. We had Bonnie Hunt on Wendy C. Live today.
Hunt.
And I adore her. I mean, it's so. I don't say that about a lot of people in any business, but
yes.
But she is just the best. And I wanted, you know, I just wanted to be my very best with her today.
Uh-huh.
And the reality was, I was sweating through my. It was like I was wearing one of those those suits that they give to wrestlers
so they can
drop weight.
Right.
It's the way I felt.
And then you didn't know if you should give her a hug.
Right.
You're all
I couldn't hug.
You kind of put the hand out and the dance and the
sweat skirt is sweat as you sport like spurting off the top of my head like a cartoon.
Give me a cool autumn breeze. I'm sorry. Yeah.
So thank you for bringing that back.
I'm sorry.
All right.
See you guys.
Right. There's going to be vomiting here. Hold on. All right. Thank you, Tom.
Bye.
We'll see you tonight.
Bye, Anna.
That's a Rokan show with Anna DeVlantis. Yeah, that's what's going on right about now. Or it's right here.
Yeah, that's us.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Well, it's you guys.
It's kind of us, plural. The team, the show.
No, I know you guys.
Don't worry. So I just want to point out that I know we'll get back to all this in a little bit. Let me just tell you what's coming up on the program so that I don't want to get too far away from the big story of the day, which is the world order has been disturbed for in the first day since, basically since VJ Day, the world order has now been reshuffled, so the Russians are in charge of Earth. We'll get to that, and A.B. Stoddard's going to join us coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. Bob Baer, formerly of the CIA, will be with us, the most publicly acknowledged case officer in the history of the CIA is Bob Baer, and he will be here to talk about that. And then Steve Stone's going to join us right at the end of the program, talk a little bit about the All-Star break and what's happening there and the Home Run Derby tonight and all the fun there. I want to say, I had a funny thing happen over the weekend. I have this scanner app. That a lot, you know, when
I have one of those too.
Right, when stuff starts to happen in town. I mean, this goes back, you know, our years and years and years of working in TV news
in
and stuff.
Television news, you tune into the scanner traffic. You can't. Yeah. It's not always verifiable. It's like what authorities are talking about at the time.
Right.
And sometimes you can glean some early information about what might be occurring.
Especially if there's something, you know, shots fired somewhere or whatever.
Right.
So there was something going on, and I just tuned into it just to see what was happening. And I listened to it. It was still out of my car when I got, you know, back in my car later, and I'm driving home late on Saturday night, and I hear this on the Chicago police scanner.
We have a crowd control problem at Concrete Cowboy.
No,
Erie and Orleans.
Is it Erie and Orleans? Is that right?
It's Franklin and Erie.
Franklin and Erie.
Crowd control problem. We need a sergeant.
A guy named Boris.
and all I'm thinking about, you're waiting for that name. So I'm like, oh my God, what is that? What's going on? And then within 20 seconds, a guy goes,
yeah, I'm on scene. These are just people waiting to get in.
Oh, big line at the Concrete Cowboy.
And
I'm surprised you didn't hear me in the background.
Right. Well, that's what I was thinking. And this was like at 1 o'clock in the morning, because if you listen on a Saturday night to the Chicago scanners, especially the ones downtown, there's a few establishments that pop up all the time.
Very true.
Bottled Blonde.
That's
on
the list.
Right.
I went to Bottled Blonde.
You did.
So basically you had to follow Violetta instead of listening to the scanner traffic.
I wasn't there. I haven't been there in a really long time. And I went.
Because you were worried about your hat? or your hat status or whether
you're... Well, actually, as we were walking there, I'm like, you know, they have a really strict dress code because we went to the Windy City Smokeout and then afterwards...
Oh, you are exactly
I am
every
so...
problem that was happening downtown over the weekend.
I know, it was so much fun.
Well, the Smokeout kind of got rained out on the Saturday, didn't it? Or
what day did I
you go Saturday or Sunday?
I was there Saturday. I stayed dry.
No, yeah, I went Saturday.
You did?
No.
Oh.
I think it got rained out on Sunday.
Oh, okay. I saw some people walking around.
I wasn't there.
Great barbecue.
Oh, okay, then it didn't count. Then it didn't happen if you weren't there.
Going.
So you went to the Windy City Smokeout, because that was the thing. A lot of the scanner traffic from Saturday night was about what was all the trouble that was happening coming out of the Windy City Smokeout. And then people disgorge into River West and River North.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And then there are people who might have, you know, been there all day and might be slightly overserved.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're stumbling around.
In their cowboy boots and the overalls.
Right. Well, those are the girls. If the guy's wearing cowboy boots and jean shorts, there's something else has happened there. But you hear...
Person down, corner of Erie and Franklin. Person down.
You hear that all the time.
Right.
And that's just a drunk.
It's like a self-inflicted thing.
Possibly intoxicated.
See, really? I don't think I was cute enough to go to the Concrete Cowboy. Plus, I was done by
It's a different look, isn't it? Because you have to have, what is it?
Yeah, it's a different look. It's
club
like a club
gear.
Look. You know, I wasn't really clubby.
That place is clubby? It's a bunch of guys in Dallas Cowboy jerseys and stuff, right?
No, that's not.
Every time I've ever been in there.
You've been in there?
Yeah.
It's like a millennial, not a club, but kind of a trendy bar.
I have been there.
Why have you been there, Rob?
I have been there twice. Oh, you mean Concrete Cowboy?
Yes.
No. I was thinking of
Bottle Blonde.
Bottle Blonde.
Okay.
Oh, Concrete Cowboy. I've never been there.
I had no idea
where it was until I heard about it on the scanner. And I'm like, oh, that's where it is.
Well, with the Bottle Blonde, I think I'm the only person. I'm like, do you have a food menu? And the girl looked at me like, really? I was like, oh.
It's not a food place?
No one's there for the
food. Well, the only reason it has a license is because it's a food place.
Mm-hmm.
Some of this food looks pretty good. I'm scouting our menu right now.
Yeah, I got a pizza. We got the Carnivora pizza.
Yeah, the pizza. That's what I was looking at. I'll go there tonight.
So you decided not to go to Concrete Cowboy because you were dressed for an outdoor festival and not for a...
Yeah, and Bottle Blonde was very close. I think we walked there from what I remember. Unless we took one of those little bikers. I'm not sure. We walked.
Like a rickshaw, pedicab?
Yeah.
Kind of thing?
I love rickshaws. Oh, my God, they're so much fun. Are those legal?
She's not really recalling whether she was on one, though. That's what worries me a little bit.
Well, I was outside and I was walking, yeah.
Were you with all girls or was it like a mixed?
It was a mixed, but then we lost the guys, which I'm like, why don't you want to go to Bottle Blonde? Isn't that where guys want to go?
Not with you.
I guess not.
It's a separate issue. That's sand to the beach right there. You guys go there for a while. We'll catch up.
Yeah, that's what they said, and then we never saw them.
Yeah.
So you're listening to the scanner traffic. Were you trying to see if you heard Violetta's voice on the background?
Well, it was funny because I heard it, and I was like back in my car, and it was literally the minute I turned my car on,
turn it
and this
on.
Thing went off. I was like, I'm hearing it, and I'm like, but what? But wait a second, Concrete Cowboy. And I did. I stopped. And I thought, because you could hear the crowd. There was the arriving officer was like, these people are just standing in line.
Yeah.
But every time it would key his mic, you would hear the crowd there,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And like on an arrest, you often hear the arrestee. protesting their
coming
innocence
through,
in the
yeah.
back. Yeah.
I didn't do anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. But there is, and I thought, oh, God, this is really something. Is it that consistently crowded there?
Yes, it's really crowded. Wow.
That was Boris. Boris was trying to pull his gun out of his pants, and that went off. Sorry, that was a mistake.
It's very crowded. Plus, you know, they're very, they try to do that selective game. If it's crowded outside, it means it's the place to be.
Right.
Got to wait in line a little bit.
14 people inside. There's 200
right.
people outside.
They do that. Come on. They totally do.
Yeah.
Then how do you, Violetta, do you have any tricks for how to get to the front of the line?
You just walk in. You walk to the front.
Mm-hmm.
If you're with guys, you tell them to get to the back behind the girls because they're not going to get any
That's
leeway.
Right.
And then you just...
A sexist.
Yeah. And then you just are like, oh, hey. And you just kind of stand there. You don't make too much commotion because then the other girls in line are going to say, hey, why'd you let that girl in? I've been waiting here. So you don't make too much commotion. You just kind of like, hey.
You walk in like you were supposed to be there.
Yeah. You're like, hey.
You got a guy at the door.
Let's get this list together. Am I on it?
You got a guy named Tiny at the door who's actually gigantic.
I think the guy there is really big. Yeah, he's like a really tall person.
Yeah. Earpiece.
And he was drinking a pumpkin spice latte last time I was there.
Oh, that's against type.
Bald-headed. Is he a bald, big bald-headed guy whose neck fat like rolls up, but it's actually muscle that goes up into his cranium?
And he can hide his little cord through it,
yeah.
The little neck fat that goes into his ear.
But worst-case scenario, just say Boris's name at the door. I'm sure he'll get in.
Yeah, that's a good tip.
I'm really surprised Vladimir Putin didn't mention Boris today.
Or in the 12 indictments.
right.
Wait, let's scan it.
My guess is Robert Mueller's familiar with Boris, but I can't imagine. You know, next time we're in the United States, maybe we stop by, hang out with Boris. Yes.
Concrete.
We should have a big special dinner for him at White House.
Long line, but no worries.
It's going to happen. I wouldn't be surprised if Boris somehow...
State dinner with Boris at the White House. Boris sitting in a corner. Everybody do the same thing. Sit in a corner table, sunglasses on, not paying attention to anybody else.
Bottle service.
He would ask that his table be elevated at the White House so he could just overlook everybody else who's there. There's Rudy Giuliani, married to number 6.
He comes out with sparklers every time someone's introduced.
Trying to sell stuff in the back of the White House.
Oh, God. All right. Well, anyway, I just wanted to point out.
I was not on the scanner. I just want to point
that
out.
Not yet.
I was not.
I am waiting for the moment because I will get random communications from Violetta over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Where
Checking in?
There's a request for something generally. Oh.
Credit card?
Would you acknowledge that that's what's going on? Hey, and she'll remember something from the week.
Well,
and somehow, 2:00 on a Saturday morning, it's when it pops to her, and she has to go, hey, you know, my dad needs a blah, 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 blah.
Well, I forget, and then I'm going to forget by the morning for sure. I can't even remember if I walked or took a rickshaw. So I got to put it in words somewhere.
Oh, God.
And my notes, you know, those get very complicated.
Yeah.
You open up your notes and your thing, you just start typing.
No, I mean, honest to God. I mean, at 4:00 in the morning, I'm getting a text from her about how, or a voicemail. Hey, we just made it. We're fine. We're fine. Like, I asked. Like, why do I, what, I mean, I don't know what, I don't understand why you're calling me, but she's calling me from, like, her like breakfast that she's having, a tempo or something like that?
Yeah.
At 4:00 in the morning?
That was for my birthday. Hello.
Oh, God. I'm fine. I just want you to know. No one asked.
And just to clear up again, I was not on the scanner. But you,
I am, but somehow at 2:00 in the morning on Saturday, I had to worry about your dad getting a new car. I don't know why that is, but I did. But it worked out. It's all going to work out for Bronco.
It is.
I hope it does.
Yes.
And then he can pick me up with that new car wherever I am.
Yes. We're trying to get Bronco Bronco his own Apple Chevrolet Equinox is I think what he should have.
He's already got great wheels. Yeah, that is a classic car. Doesn't he really drive that?
Yeah, not really.
But he needs something for the restaurant.
Car,
he needs something for the restaurant.
Oh, I see.
Something more practical.
Yeah. So that's become whether or not she's in a, and his daughter's in a rickshaw, but somehow he's got to get a new Equinox. I don't know. All right. Thank you very much.
It was a fun weekend.
Oh, God. Stay close after 6:00 tonight. You know who would say that, don't you?
I think I do, yeah.
There.
DJ Man.
Yeah. Oh, I got such a headache. Oh, it was quite a weekend.
Were you at Windy City Smokeout? I think I saw you
there. Yeah, it was. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together.
For Brett Eldridge.
For Brett Eldridge, you did.
Radio guys, no idea who Brett Eldridge is.
Hall & Oates, he would, for sure. Be all over that.
Hey, no question about that. I don't know which one's which, but I love them both. What I would say is stay close because I got a family 4-pack of tickets for you to go to the Blackhearts convention coming up next week. That's the 27th through 29th of July at the Chicago Hilton. I got guest rooms. I got passes. I got it all for you. Stay close.
Yeah, Radio Man would have just loved the Windy City Smokeout. That's for sure.
Yeah. He'd be looking for T-Swift the whole time.
You know, it's interesting, though, that those guys always are the ones that get up on stage, you know, to do the introduction.
They try to steal the show.
Right. And sometimes guys...
It's like, get out of here.
There's a very famous story when Glenn Beck, the radio talk show host guy, when he was a radio DJ, because he was that guy before he was, before he was worried about... caliphates and had a chalkboard. He was a top 40 DJ. Oh, a lot of guys.
I thought about him. I thought he was always talk radio.
No, Limbaugh was too. Limbaugh was Jeff Christie in Pittsburgh before he was, talking to politics. Just lets you know that guy could actually change the world. That's the problem with radio, with DJ guy. Anyway, the point is that Beck actually jumped on stage at Sun Devil Stadium in Phoenix, and and his competing radio station was throwing this gigantic mega concert on stage, and he jumped on and took credit for his radio station after the competitor had spent $1 million to put on this concert.
He said it was his radio's sponsorship.
He snuck back security and got him and did it.
Classic radio guy move.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tells you something.
And then
about
the artist on stage is always like, is this guy going to stop? Like, I got to play.
That's very true. That's right. And the artist on stage, one of the reasons I know that is, I know that story for two places. But from Beck himself, who boasts about that, and the artist he was welcoming to the stage was Richard Marx.
Oh, friend of the show.
Yeah. So it was like, and Richard's like, is this the right guy? Is this?
What's he doing?
I don't think that's the station that hired us.
Unbelievable.
All right. So I'm just letting you know that radio has ruined the world. The reason that we're worried about Putin today is because radio DJs who became talk show hosts.
More than you think.
Here, let me tell you something. I got a lot to say about politics.
Oh, gosh.
Radio guy 2020, baby.
Can we do something else? Because it is that time. Please.
Okay. All right. If you say so.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show. Let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
This is not going to make me feel better, I don't think.
No.
Number five.
All right. Here's the president making history today. Even though United States intelligence officials have direct evidence of Russia meddling in the election, the president thinks that Vladimir Putin has an interesting offer.
I have great confidence in my intelligence people, but I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer.
What?
Okay. So, I want to put this in Chicago terms.
Okay. I think it would be helpful.
This is like Donald.
Seems ridiculous.
This is like Donald Trump saying to the mob that the capo of the mob, the Tony Accardo, let's say, in his heyday, Tony Accardo has personally invited the FBI over to his house to watch him torture a guy that they think might have done something bad. That's kind of what the idea is. This is an incredible offer. We get to go there. Mueller gets to go there and watch them interview a guy. What could possibly go wrong?
I don't know.
I mean, all right. I always wonder, what the people in my family who love Donald Trump would think about this. But I don't want to call them and ask them, because then I would have to talk to them.
Oh, and you know what they would think. Everything he says is great.
But how could that be a good idea? There's no one, under any other circumstance, it's like Donald Trump is like heroin. Under no other circumstance would you ever think that it was a good idea to sleep in the subway with a rat as your pillow, other than the fact that you're on heroin.
Well,
and you're like, this is a good idea.
Not only was he suggesting that Mueller investigators should be present while his own officers would interview the people, which sounds like a disaster, but he also was asking there's a caveat. He wants America to reciprocate.
Right.
So there was that other piece of it that Putin's going to try to get something for this charade of having his guys present.
Give up an American who's originally from Chicago that Putin says gave Hillary Clinton $400 million. If he gave Hillary Clinton $400 million, she wouldn't be wandering around the countryside of Connecticut trying to figure out what her name is anymore.
He wants that guy,
right?
Because he's heavily involved in campaigning and outing what the Russians have done, and that led to sanctions that we've discussed on this program.
Right. He wants to get a guy who narked on Russian oligarchs in the United States, two Russian officials, who have decided to sequester the money of those officials because they believe what this guy had to say, our own officials. So do you believe us or do you believe them?
Right.
That's the question. And why is he, what is his game? What did he get out of this? He can be tough. He's tough with everybody else. He's tough with all the people that we're supposed to be friendly with. Why can't he be tough to the guys we're not supposed to be friendly with or that we're not friendly with? Guys who actually attacked our institutions here. Why? Why? Guys who are here stealing. Why can't you be tough with them? What's going on? Why? Hold on. There's more. Thank you for asking. So Trump responded to questions about Putin's involvement, citing his often repeated verse about lack of collusion.
Just to say it one time again, and I say it all the time, there was no collusion. I didn't know the president. There was nobody to collude with. There was no collusion with the campaign. And every time you hear all of these, you know, 12 and 14, it's stuff that has nothing to do. And frankly, they admit these are not people involved in the campaign.
Huh? Word salad.
Well, he's saying it's separate from the collusion. There's no connectivity between these 12 individuals that Rosenstein announced on Friday and his own campaign.
The Magnitsky Act, which is the centerpiece of this. What Putin did say there is interesting, because what Putin is saying is, hey, we want this guy that narked on all of our oligarchs.
Mm-hmm.
You send him back to, we'll take him.
Yeah, right.
Essentially. And the fascinating piece of that is that was the centerpiece of the conversation that Donald Trump Jr. and that Jared and that Manafort and all those guys that were involved in that meeting in Trump Tower in 2016 were a part of. And it's interesting to me that that Putin would bring that up today.
That's right. You wonder if it was part of their face-to-face, closed-door meeting involving just the two of them.
A little bit of a brushback pitch, too. That ultimately may be the only thing that Trump has to fear here. Maybe Trump, Trump's fearful of something, so maybe that's it. Maybe it's he doesn't believe that there was collusion. He knows he didn't talk to anybody. Maybe there's other people that he believes didn't talk to anybody, but he does know that meeting took place. And he doesn't know what was actually said in that meeting. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't know because he wasn't in it.
There was a recording of that meeting.
Right. And how jammed up could his son or son-in-law be? And maybe that's why he's being so, kind and soft when it comes to Vladimir Putin, because it would jam up his family.
Entertaining that issue.
Right. Maybe it's as simple as that meeting. But there's something here. All right, and one more here, I think. All right, so the president then went on to assert that there isn't any reason to think Russia was involved. He doesn't see any reason why Russia would be involved in the hacking.
All I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be.
Yeah.
Except what you said in the first part of the sentence, which was your director of national intelligence and all the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, they all say he was.
And Dan Coats reissued, the director of national intelligence, reissued that a statement to that effect today saying, yes, we have clear evidence of Russian meddling in the election and their ongoing pervasive efforts to undermine our democracy. Just as a reminder.
It's just a little something to think about.
Put that out there.
Well, at least they had fun with a soccer ball.
We hope we do as good a job. That's very nice. That will go to my son, Barron. We have no question. In fact, Melania, here you go.
So Putin handed him a soccer ball. And then
The World Cup wrapped up in Russia and soon is going to be in America, the United States.
Two away. Goes to Doha, Canada. Qatar, and then U.S., Mexico, and Canada. If the U.S. still exists.
2024?
Here, Melania, 26. Take this. I'm not going to see the kid, so give it to him.
Right. Barron is gonna love this soccer ball. He's going to be a big part of the U.S. if there still is a U.S. in 2026.
Would have been worse if he asked Putin to sign it. We just signed this for my kid.
Right. And then he tosses it over to his wife. I would have liked to have seen him do it like, when they're really playing soccer. You know how they get the ball on the sideline and then they throw it over their head?
Oh.
They kind of do that thing. They grab it up real fast. They drag one foot behind and they go.
And then Melania headbutts it back into his face.
Right, exactly.
Or into Putin's face. Could have been, yeah.
I don't think so. I think she knows where her next bread is buttered here. And it's either going to be living with the Macrons or the Putins.
The Obamas might take her.
That's true, too. Anybody take me. Although she'd be a refugee and they have to throw her out of the country. All right, are you ready for number?
We're ready.
Number four.
A new protest is scheduled for this evening to demand justice for the 37-year-old man who was shot by police on the South Shore neighborhood over the weekend. That's after, however, the Chicago Police Department has made the unprecedented move to release the body camera video of the incident within 48 hours of it occurring. And the body camera shows exactly what happened. This is not a disputable case anymore. This guy had a gun. He clearly had a gun. He was reaching for it. He tussled with police, tried to run away from him, turn around back toward him, and reach for his gun when they shot him. Eddie Johnson held a news conference earlier today and said this.
What I would say to those people is calm down. I know everybody is emotionally heightened. I get that. But at the same time, we have a process in place. And if we have to hold individuals accountable, we will. But we have to do it and respect the process. Let the process play out and don't judge things on your emotion. Let the facts guide your decision on what you think.
Not often that we see the body cam video this quickly after an incident like that. Eddie Johnson also said that he did not have a concealed carry permit. Even though there's some reports out there that said he did have the right to have a firearm. I'm not sure those are confirmed yet.
Yes, he had a FOID card, but not a concealed carry.
Got it. So he had it out on him in public.
Right, which you can't do. In Illinois, you have to have a concealed carry permit to be able to CCL. You have to have to walk around with the gun. You can have the weapon in your home if you have a FOID card, or you can have it in your vehicle if it's disabled. But that's it. You know, you can't have a loaded gun in your car unless you have a CCL. I mean, there are rules here, but this is not even what it's about. I mean, the guy clearly had a holster, and he reached for it with the police trying to stop him. If anybody standing with police officers, they stop you. Mm-hmm. They want to see. They were asking him for his concealed carry license. He did not have one. Mm-hmm. And by the way, they will know very quickly. As soon as they know his identity, they will be told by the dispatcher whether he has a concealed carry license. If you get pulled over in this town, your driver's license it will tell, or your license plate on your car. We'll say the driver is a registered concealed carry holder.
That's right. And these were officers on foot patrol. The community has asked for more foot patrols in this area, and they had word that he may be carrying a gun, so they stopped him to talk to him about that gun.
All right. On to less consequential things. Unless you are a very Cavallari fan, this might be very consequential in your 3-year, two, and your one. But first, Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Licking the hand of a Russian tyrant.
Is there a dog? Is there a dog? You know, Putin, did you know that that's one of Putin's tricks? Is he brings his dogs into the meetings with him?
For protection?
A cute, cuddly dog?
No. They're like labs, but they're like labs on steroids, like snarling labs.
Same stuff they give their athletes.
I thought it was like Dobermans.
Yeah, then he comes in and he's done this before. Like he finds out people have like an aversion to dogs, and they come into the meeting with him.
He's so strategic. He was an hour late too.
Right, he was an hour late. You know why he was an hour late?
Well, I would think that's on purpose.
He always is.
He's an hour late because it got the meeting into the prime time talk block
in Russia
on Russian television.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah. So the whole thing would be covered in prime time in Russia. Pretty smart.
Yep. Always thinking, that guy.
Maybe I should have held it till 3 o'clock in the morning. Nice job. Nice job, President Trump.
Number three.
Rookies around the NFL are unpacking their various spring training camps. Jay Cutler is packing up his wife's office for the big move into her new office on the second installment of Very Cavallari.
This is engaging.
We got some insight into how Cuddy and K-Cav push each other's buttons.
What are you going to do?
Buy a house today.
That's cool. For yourself?
Kind of all the family members here.
I'm not moving.
No, I think we need to consider this in all seriousness.
Jay and I love to push each other's buttons. We definitely have this playful banter, and he can be a little shit sometimes, but he makes me laugh.
Oh, they're so
cute.
Just
call it 50-50.
It's definitely not 50-50. I'll think about it.
It might be, though.
Okay, bye.
All right, 50-50.
Bye.
We'll flip a coin later.
No.
I lost that battle.
But the house is on the market. It's already been in the real estate, like the celebrity pages.
Well, they shot this thing.
Obviously he won.
This show, by the way, I think I gotta start recording him because I just want to see what Cutler has to say, but I have to sit through all like the fake reality stuff. And, like some boyfriend's crying about his girlfriend flirting with some guy. I'm like, when's Jay coming on the TV? It's pretty, it's something for sure.
You have to, are you liking it or not liking it?
I like the Cutler aspect of it, but I sat through the entire hour-long episode last night.
You'd like it recut for ESPN with just Jay Cutler.
Yes.
The highlight reel?
Yeah.
Because you have to sit through Kristen Cavallari's friends drama, whether it's real or fake or whatever.
I can't tell if this is for football fans or if this is for young adult women.
I like Stephen A., to have a telestrator.
Yeah, can you imagine?
And kind of doing that.
He's got a
win. Now, here you see Jay Cutler proposing the sale of his own home. Now, his wife has not discussed this with him. This is not going to end well. How would this end well?
That's what you do, by the way. You wait for the cameras to roll before you go, hey, I'm buying a new house.
But, seeing Cutler interact with them, it almost feels like he's trolling everyone because he knows how dumb the whole thing is.
Yes, well, it is. We're moving on.
Number two.
Sacha Baron Cohen's new Showtime show, Who is America?, premiered last night in a bit featuring Kindergartians, a fictional program to get guns into the hands of kids under the age of 7.
Oh, gee.
And it's spearheaded by Sacha Baron Cohen's Israeli anti-terror expert character, Colonel Aaron Murad. Among others who brought on the program were Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh.
The intensive three-week kindergarten course introduces specially selected children from 12 to 4 years old to pistols, rifles, semi-automatics, and a rudimentary knowledge of mortars. In less than a month, a first grader can become a first grenade.
Oh, gee. Do you think that anyone took
so
that seriously?
So he got Joe Walsh to do the story? Is that what that is? Or to go along with it?
Joe Walsh, the congressman?
Yeah. So he asked him to read this stuff off teleprompter like as a promotional announcement. Great American Joe Walsh tells Israeli children, 4-year-olds, to be able to first grenaders as opposed to first graders. And they went along with it. Oh, my God, that's brilliant. Here's Larry Pratt of the Gun Owners of America.
The science behind this program is proven. At age 4, a child processes images 80% faster than an adult, meaning that essentially, like owls, they can see in slow motion. Children under 5 also have elevated levels of the pheromone Blink-182, produced by the part of the liver known as the Rita Ara. This allows nerve reflexes to travel along the Cardi B neural pathway to the Wiz Khalifa 40% faster, saving time and saving lives.
Oh, gee.
It's amazing.
Oh, my God. Number of people he's duped. I mean, he got Sarah Palin, Bernie Sanders. I mean, the list goes on and on.
These are the people that are, leading us again in the media, and they're trying to tell us exactly how to live our lives. How dumb are these people? All right, we got to move along because A.B. Stoddard is going to tell us how to lead our lives here in a second.
Number one.
Tributes continue to pour in from around the NHL for former Blackhawks goalie Ray Emery, who drowned over the weekend at the age of 35. He was a member of the 2013 Stanley Cup Championship team, going 17-1 in relief of Corey Crawford, including 45 save effort against the Calgary Flames.
Cervenka, he's ready. Standing at center ice, picks up the puck at center ice. Wheels in over the Hawk line. Cervenka to the right wing circle. Then to the slot. Shoots. Emery knocks it wide with a glove.
Oh, my
Hawks win! Hawks win! The Blackhawks win their first game on this 6-game road trip. And Ray Emery, the unquestioned star of this game, stood tall when he had to. Knocked that last shootout volley away to preserve the win for the Hawks.
Ray Emery was 35. Brokaw Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. I don't want to go any later than I am right now with A.B. Stoddard because I want to hear her thoughts on what just happened today. A.B., obviously, the nation is talking about those who have seen it now, people who were working this morning, didn't get an opportunity to see this stuff live as many of us did, and then eventually had to rely on programs like this or cable news to explain what occurred. When I watched this morning, I stopped and I thought to myself, I'm watching the end of a 70-year world order. It's over now. This was the final punctuation mark, the period, full stop, because what happened at NATO last week and then what happened today in Helsinki basically says to our allies, to Western Europe, to NATO, we don't need you anymore. And this is like every worst nightmare. Then the president goes, hey, but, Putin's a good guy. He's a real guy. It's fine. It's all right. He said he didn't do it. We don't believe he did it. Let's just get along. It's better for all of us. And that's the end of the construction of the world economy as we knew it.
Right. And we've talked about this a few times, Ro, and we haven't spoken, the three of us, since the NATO eruption. But certainly the meeting of the G7 in Quebec last month was the appetizer. President Trump's posture on these alliances is that they're a ripoff. He does not appreciate America's role in really birthing them and nurturing them and giving them support because it was in our best interest and it was in the interest of peace and prosperity worldwide, that when we are not safe and stable, the world is not safe and stable, that we were preventing in these alliances countries from giving in to their nationalist instincts, fighting each other at borders, finding common ground and common purpose. And his whole tone, his whole behavior, even if he tried to hold a press conference at the end and say, see, I unified everybody because I made them pay more, and now we're all invested in NATO stronger. Everyone knows from Quebec to Brussels to this week in Helsinki that he does not care and feed these alliances and doesn't appreciate their purpose. And therefore is not willing to do the hard work to keep them alive, but is also contemptuous of them. So it really is a frightening moment for that reason. It's terrifying to see someone like Vladimir Putin, who's, such a capable mind, just trained in the KGB and then on the world stage for 18 years, in the leadership of Russia for nearly two decades, knows exactly, literally, where he's buried the bodies, but basically how to get around the posture of many other leaders in these Western countries who come and go. And he's sort of the incumbent old hand, who knows. He's what President Xi in China will be, let's say, in another 15 years. And so it was really calling into question, after all the tweets that we've talked about from 2015 to 2016 to 2017 to 2018, and all of the interviews where he's given a moral equivalence to Russians and saying, we kill people too, we finally had President Trump next to President Putin and admitting for all the world to see that he is going to give in to President Putin, that he is going to throw his own intelligence community under the bus, and that he's not going to protect us. That he's not going to stand up and do his job, which is to put the United States first.
You saw from the president after the talk after the summit that was public that he did jump on Twitter and he seemed to try to defend some of what he tried to say that he could see was not being widely embraced. It was being condemned not only by Democrats but members of his own party. And he's saying a productive dialogue is not only good for the U.S. and good for Russia, it's good for the world. Rudy Giuliani was out front then saying, be no good to call Putin a liar. This is the way you have to handle these things. Even Senator Rand Paul was saying it'd be a waste of time to hold him Putin accountable. Let's move forward on issues that matter, like Syria, terrorism, energy. What is that all about? It doesn't seem that even members of the Republican Party are on board with any of this. In terms of explaining it away.
That's distracting us. That's distracting. He could have stood up and said, he doesn't have to stand up and say, Vladimir Putin is lying. He knows damn well that the 12 people who are indicted were actively working with government approval and possibly, probably, likely government direction to meddle in our elections, and we're going to get you. He had to stand up and say, we have the best intelligence, you know, services in the world who made this expert assessment. We know exactly what people are trying to do to us at all times. We will counter those threats. We will do what we have to do. And there was a way to get through that conversation and protect U.S. interests and not cave to Vladimir Putin and say, well, he really stood up really strongly and in his denial. So, you know, there's another camp that's worried about the server. I mean, it's just... It was so clear what he was doing.
It's a totally irrelevant point because the U.S. intelligence service has already figured out exactly what happened here. So they don't have this server thing and then they throws a Pakistani under the bus. What about that Pakistani kid who had the server? Where's that? Which is, you know, again, it's playing on the notion. Oh, he's from Pakistan. Oh, he's a Muslim. Maybe they're behind it. You know, it's so short-sighted. And I think the problem, what has occurred to me, I want to just take this out to 50,000 feet for a second. We are living in a world in which we're just worried about getting to our next commercial break as a culture. Whereas the President Xi and Putin, these are long-standing. These guys are worried about decades at a time, mm-hmm. or centuries at a time, as the Chinese do. We're worried. We're worried from minute to minute to minute. We're the largest economy in the world, rivaled only by China. Russia has an economy the size of the state of New York. Think about that for a second. It has a 10% of the United States economy. 10%. So for every dollar we make, they make 10 cents in GDP. Just think about that. They're not that much of a world player. They do have nuclear weapons, and they've got a really good expeditionary security force. That's the only thing they've got, and they're willing to kill ruthlessly their enemies in really horrifying ways. This is a Russian thing. This goes back to the czars. Kill people in a sneaky yet spectacular way, and you will scare your enemies. And that is what they do. That's what they're known for. Mm-hmm. And we are being short-sighted about this because he's going to do this to Donald Trump. He's going to do this to one of the kids. He's going to jam them up in a way because he can. And now he knows he's emboldened to do it. And he'll do as much as he can to get away with until he doesn't. And if Donald Trump thinks, hey, it worked for me, so I'm going to stay out of the way here, which must be his calculation. That's the most benign explanation of his calculation. Is that?
Well, you know what? That's fine. But if he is not compromised by the Russian government because of money that was put into his business when he was not liquid and he was in debt, that his sons and his sons bragged about in 2007, 2008. If he is not compromised in some way financially, he's really going to have to prove that he's not, and that it's disconnected, that it's just a love of strongmen or getting along that makes him behave the way he did today. He has too much of a trail on Russia. He's done too much business with the Russians for this to not be called into question. That's what everyone has speculated on from day one. It is speculated on at the highest levels in the darkest conversations in this town.
Will Republicans? Yeah, I know we've talked about this a lot for the last year. But do you think that Republicans, patriotic Republicans, will step up here and say we got to stop this because this does border on dangerous for the United States?
Right. Well, we're going to see what the next 24 to 48 hours bring. There are some people that are coming out and clearly saying you saw from McConnell and Ryan, the two Senate and House leaders, trying to be emphatic that. You know, he is not our friend. There's no moral equivalence. We believe the assessment of the intelligence community. And it's going to be a very tough few days, obviously, for people like Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, National Security Advisor Josh Bolton, who have been in the past very clear and unequivocal about the Russians being our enemies. And of course, Force National Intelligence Dan Coats today put out a statement, really in defiance of the president to say in no uncertain terms that we are under attack. And we're going to be. This conversation is going to go on. We're heading right into a midterm election in 3.5 months tomorrow. And no one has done anything about this because this has become some politically taboo, you know, thing, a policy crisis that we can't act on with a policy, you know, decision. We can't push forward substantively on this issue because it hurts Donald Trump's feelings. So it is going to be an interesting, you know, I looked around today. I saw what people were saying. Senator Tom Cotton was trying to be a Russia hawk without ever mentioning President Trump's name. Everyone is, you know, going to wiggle into their positions. Some of them are going to come clean, as we've seen, but it's going to be an interesting couple of days because Pompeo is going to have to testify on Capitol Hill. There's going to be some really tough conversations about why the president couldn't stand up today and say, we're the hope of the earth. We lead the free world. We are not going to be taken advantage of. We're not a joke. You know, we're here to stand by our allies and we're not going to have our free and fair elections messed with. But he does not want to say that. And that's really that's the burning question is that if he's not beholden to Vladimir Putin, he continues to put all his energy into acting like it.
All right. On a scale of 0% to 100%, how much more concerned are you today than you were yesterday about America?
It's pretty bad. It's up. I mean, yesterday I was really concerned. I really was after NATO. I mean, come on, that was really an introduction.
So is it 100% more today than yesterday?
But it's like 50% more. But I just urge everyone to put their country before their tribalism and just straighten this out, whatever means possible.
AB Stoddard, Real Clear Politics reader there. Thank you very much, AB. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Newt Gingrich just tweeted out saying that this is the mistake of Donald Trump's presidency, the greatest mistake of this presidency. Newt, who is willing to be down with anything.
Oh, he had a good run.
Nothing would be easier politically than to refuse to meet, to refuse to engage, but that would not accomplish anything. As president, I cannot make decisions on foreign policy in a futile effort to appease partisan critics or the media or Democrats who want to do nothing but resist and obstruct.
There's the... It is sort of the end of the world as we know it. Yeah, that's the president from earlier today in what is being described even by some of his most fervent supporters, high-profile supporters, including Newt Gingrich, as a disastrous presentation here by the president. Particularly bad.
He's really taking some heat from within his own party. Paul Ryan out to say I didn't know what the president was talking about. Of course, there's been meddling, and it's been verified by our intelligence community, and many others also jumping on board.
Right, the president is saying he doesn't know why it was. Why would Putin want to meddle in this election? I don't understand. Why would he want to do that? Why would he want to steal those things? Bob Baer, one of the most decorated agents in CIA history, is joining us right now, and you are intimately familiar with former Soviet Union and then the Russian Federation and their interactions in the Middle East. A lot of this does come back to what is going on in the Middle East. The president tried to frame this, Bob, by saying, listen, we need their help in Syria, and we need their help to try to keep Iran in a box. And then in this press conference today, the little talked about piece today was that Putin said, hey, that Iran nuclear deal was great. I don't know why the United States walked away from it. That was a dumb move, basically in front of the president, the guy who did it. I mean, what is that? That just tells you that the whole thing was set up to make Trump look small, Putin look big.
Oh, I thought he looked awful. I mean, everybody has. I mean, you've got Fox News is going after him, which I never thought that would happen. I mean, this thing in Helsinki was an absolute disaster. I mean, he went in with no agenda. One thing that should have been on the agenda is Syria. What do you do about Iran? Iran controls maybe half the country with Hezbollah. But that was, there was no preparation at all. And it's the Russians have broken the ceasefire that the Trump administration brokered in Syria and moved south on Daraa. I mean, he was checked at every single point. I mean, and I think he loves it that Iran is deep into Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon. They're allied. Iran's buying weapons from Russia. They are of a pair. And there was no intention ever of the Iranians pulling out of Syria under Russian pressure. It just wasn't going to happen. But, I mean, he doesn't listen to briefings. And I'm not even sure he listens to Secretary of State, Pompeo. This is the problem. He thinks he knows it. And what worries me is we're dealing with an aging mind here. Yeah. And he didn't realize that moving the embassy to Jerusalem was sort of our negotiating, wedge into this to get an agreement with the Palestinians, and he just gave that up with no negotiations. So you really have to wonder about his, I just common sense when it comes to foreign policy. I mean, clearly he has none.
There's so many moments that were astonishing, I think, to a lot of people. One of them, though, came from Putin. When were you surprised that Putin, when asked, did you want Donald Trump to be president? Did you want him to win? And did you direct your people to help? He completely discounted the second piece of that question, but he did say yes. He wanted Donald Trump to be president. A surprising admission to you?
No, not at all. I mean, the whole thing is Putin is flaunting this at this point. That first of all, showing up at the meeting an hour late was an insult to the president. It was Putin's way of saying, I'm in control of things. Mm-hmm. And Putin also didn't come out and say, look, it's completely nonsense. We've blackmailed the president of the United States. We have something on. He didn't deny it. I mean, I think I've never seen a disaster like this ever in American foreign policy, and this goes back to our independence.
Right. I agree.
I think, the question is, has the dam broken?
With Republicans?
With everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, even the people that don't really read newspapers, are they going to catch on?
Yeah. I looked at this day when this whole event ended this morning, and I thought to myself, all right, what do I say? What do I come out here and try to present about this? What pieces of this story are most important and what are least? Any kind of way you want to process this to put it on the air, and I was, to me, it reminded me of the weeks after September 11th, when we were trying to figure out who we were as a country and how we were going to come back together and what we were going to do. And the one thing about September 11th was we had been attacked and we were ready to get together, at least for that short period of time. We were hanging the flags, we were getting together, we were coming around a communal goal. And now we are so split, and in part due to the very, very expert work of the FSB and the GRU, the Russian intelligence services, to get into our, not just to get into Hillary Clinton's emails, but or DNC's emails, but to get into our heads, on social media and put up fake groups. There's a woman we did the story earlier today. There was a Russian group, one of these troll groups. It identified itself as the Chicago Daily News, which is a now defunct newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
But by putting stuff out under the banner of the Chicago Daily News, people took it seriously on Facebook and on Twitter. And so we are now falling prey to these people who wish to divide us. And we saw it happen. They jumped in on Ferguson, Missouri. I would not be surprised if they're jumping in on this stuff that's happening here in Chicago from over the weekend, where there was a justifiable police shooting. At least it appears to be a justifiable police shooting, according to the video that's been released. And there's going to be more protests tonight. Who are organizing those protests? The Russians are part of this, but we're doing it to ourselves.
Yeah, they know our fault lines. They know our suspicions. And a lot of it's based on a small truth, like Strzok and Page, who were communicating on FBI cell phones, and they shouldn't have been. And they were expressing political opinions. But the fact is, they've created this fantasy about there's the deep state is in the FBI. I worked with the FBI for years. I mean, that's the last place you're going to find the deep state. They're conservative, They voted overwhelmingly for Trump, as I understand. So that it just it's an out lie. This is what the Russians are good at. And there's this Russian woman that was arrested today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She was clearly trying to make inroads into the NRA. NRA didn't know who she was, let's be fair, but she still got in. And her boss in Russia is an organized crime leader who works for the FSB. So, and there's a lot more people like this, and they're here, and people just simply refuse to believe the evidence of an indictment that was beautifully written and based on facts, is the Mueller indictment of 13 July. Mm. And then when you got Coates, the Director of National Intelligence, has come out and said, we are under attack now. We are under attack just as we were on 9/11. It may not seem, it may not be, you know, it may not be attacks leading to bloodshed, but it is possibly more devastating. And then the president says, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, it's the first time the president's ever declined in this country's history to defend our borders and our political system. It's never happened before.
And his supporters would say, well, he's the only one defending our borders, but they're not understanding that our borders also, you know, this is also a fight. We could say, yes, defend the southern border if you'd like, and then somehow start war with Canada for reasons none of us seem to understand. But then there this idea of this attack benefited him, so then therefore it is okay. Can I run just a theory past you about some of this? This idea that Putin is running out. He said this twice today. Once in the interview with Fox News, and then obviously from the podium today, he said, "You know, I didn't know who Donald Trump was when he was in Moscow in 2013, 2014, right. Whatever that was, 2013." And so we don't have the kind of resources to go, you know, follow a guy around. Who knew this guy was going to be president? There were 500 American industrialists in the country that year. Mm-hmm. We couldn't possibly, you know, follow him and get a videotape of him. You know, this dossier, the P tape, as it's known. So he's saying I don't even know who the guy was. We don't know, and that may well be true.
But let me ask. It's a flat out lie. It's a flat out lie.
But hold on one second.
The first time that Trump was met by the KGB. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You finish. You got better than I do. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I got latency on this. So it's a satellite phone. The first time that Trump was met by a KGB officer was in 1986. Trump did not know it was a KGB officer. He was the resident in New York. They bring him to Moscow in 87, and it's the KGB that does it. They had a very thick file on him. He comes back and puts two advertisements, you know, in the newspapers against NATO, against our alliance with Japan, which was right up Russia's alley, the KGB's alley, and they continued to monitor him. You look at the Financial Times, this article is just devastating from last week, where his business partner in Trump Toronto is Vladimir Putin himself. You look at the chain of evidence, a beautifully written article. Wow. So he's in business with the Russians, so to pretend the Russians don't know who he is just crazy.
Trump, the president almost challenged them to put out a tape if they have it today. He said, well, if they had a tape, it would be out already. But Putin asked about whether or not, you know, he had compromising information on the president, also dodged. You talked about his own, you know, work as a spy, and then just what Ro just mentioned there about, you know, I didn't even know he was at the Miss Universe pageant or that he was in town at the time. I mean, what are the chances that Russia does have compromising? You're saying very strong.
Oh, I think it's very good. All those, I mean, every single one of those rooms and all the major hotels have video. That's the way. I worked the KGB. I've watched them in business. I've seen them, and that's what they do. They take pictures of people. They incriminate them. Now, I'm not saying there is one from Trump, but if you had it near Putin and Trump was doing carrying out your mission of taking a wrecking ball to NATO, the G7, the EU, to the British Prime Minister, to Merkel, and so on, so why even, you know, he's doing effectively the bidding of Vladimir Putin.
Well, he clearly is.
Going after the Atlantic Alliance is just is astonishing for somebody like me who was a cold warrior.
Well, let's talk about that for before we let you go. I know, and thank you so much for spending your time here with us. I know you're busy, and this is obviously this is a day that you know requires your expertise for a lot of different media outlets. So, thank you for spending your time with us, Bob Baer. But before I let you go, this idea that he's turning on the Theresa May, and she's sort of being eaten alive by Brexit, which she supported. Right? I mean, she was a part of that. And this whole, now they're trying to figure out how to do it where it doesn't destroy their economy. You've got the Western, as you mentioned, the Western European Atlantic Alliance with France and with Germany. He's trying to get in the way of that. He's insulting to them. He's belittling of them. Then he goes and he says, I don't know why Vladimir Putin would interfere with us. And he kisses his keister and plays, and they pass a soccer ball back and forth into his wife. I mean, it's astounding to watch an American president doing this, because it's not like we don't want to have, listen, we'd all like to have, you know, friendly relations all over the world. That's not really the issue here. These guys are trying to take us down, and they have been forever. They are a real adversary, even though they are a pipsqueak country compared to us and dozens of other countries in the world. Compared to California, they are a pipsqueak country. If you took California and made its own country, it'd be bigger in terms of economic power than Russia. Right? So don't. So
yeah,
please.
There's no economic reason at all to ally with Russia. No, we shouldn't be at war with them, but he has no plan. And, you know, people keep on using this word, the fact that he is attacking the United States and our institutions and supporting somebody who shot down an airplane, attacked an ally, a citizen with. A fourth-generation nerve gas agent. It's treasonous. What else can I say?
Well, you and John Brennan are on the same page there. All right, Bob, thank you so much.
Thank you,
always
Bob.
Appreciate your time, sir.
Thanks.
Bob Baer, that's a true American hero right there. And if you don't believe it, read the book, look him up, go watch Syriana, the movie, to see what that guy was willing to sacrifice for the United States of America. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. Our old friend Steve Stone joins us right now. Steve Stone on baseball, brought to you by Let Us Entertain You Restaurants.
Yeah, give Il Porcellino a try. That's right on Hubbard Street. And try the pasta benetti, because I know Jason really likes it, but I think it's okay. It's kind of like him. It's inconsistent, but it's all right. The food is just great.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Wow.
A slam and a recommendation all in one.
I happen to think that that's an excellent pasta. Il Porcellino is killing it, by the way. Yeah. It's doing it. That is a, it's really, really, really good.
Must go.
Yep. There you go.
And they have the open windows, so on a nice summer night.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You just can't go wrong. All right. It is All-Star Week. And this is really a lot of fun for baseball fans. But I think even if you're a passive or, you know, kind of fair weather baseball fan, tonight especially, the All-Star game itself, you know, can get a little contrived at times, because now they're changing pitchers on every pitch or something, right? It's like a totally different deal. But I think the that home run derby is just such a great spectacle to watch.
Yeah, I think that they've made it into something that's really entertaining. I mean, they were looking for something to spread the All-Star game out over a few days. They've got the Futures game, and that's always good.
Yeah.
And when you look ahead, when you look at a lot of the players that play in that Futures game, you're going to see them in the major leagues. Some being in the neighborhood of 75% to 80% of the players you see in the Futures game, you see in the major leagues in the not too distant future. That's good, obviously. The All-Star game is entertaining. It still is an All-Star game, so it loses some of the drama that that I think a regular game would have. But I like the whole weekend. I think it's a really nice event, and I think baseball fans really enjoy it. But you're right about the home run derby. That creates a certain amount of excitement for people. I mean, look, we're talking about exit velocity and launch angles all season long, and so this is a product of it. This is how guys hit those home runs, the launch angle and the exit velocity.
I happen to believe that park favors lefties a little bit more, Steve. That's why I'm going with Kyle Schwarber. You got a pick tonight?
No, I really don't. It's one of those things that I don't even believe I'm going to watch, but I see a lot of baseball
really?
During the course of the year. Yeah, I mean,
enjoy the break.
It's like the way that I really describe it is, you know, when you have a wonderful butcher that creates beautiful lamb chops and veal chops for you, mm-hmm. on his off day, he probably doesn't go in and cut meat. So that's kind of the way that I feel about watching this game on days when I have off. Yeah,
I get it. I'm with you. It's a busman's holiday. Who needs it? But I think as a fan, I mean, this is the one thing. I'm going to go home tonight, and I'm going to throw a couple steaks on the grill for mm-hmm. myself. And then I am going to watch Anderson Cooper cry and the yes. Home Run Derby simultaneously on the two
go
TVs.
Go back and forth. When you start to cry, go to the Home Run Derby. Yeah. Come back to
No,
Anderson.
I'm going
to
put two TVs on. I'm going to just watch both of those things because there's going to be I think I'm going to see both tonight. I'm going to see a lot of excitement uh-huh. at Nats Park, right? Or what is
yeah, it? Nationals
it?
Park.
Nationals yep. Park. And then yeah. I'm gonna get to see Anderson because he's on no sleep and he thinks that the country's coming to an end. So it's gonna be a lot of fun.
It will be.
All right. So as this break now for the White Sox, what do you think the White Sox are thinking about doing over this All-Star break? Because obviously, you know, you got sort of the, you know, this trade deadline and trading season starting on the other side of this. What do you expect?
Well, now that the All-Star game's a little bit later than it normally is because, you know, we started the season earlier and the Sox, for one, have played 95 to this point. There's 67 games left, so it's not really the halfway point. It's actually beyond that. And we are heading to the trading deadline, and I know all the baseball people go to the All-Star game. I'm sure there's a lot of conversations about what do you have, what do you need, what are you looking for in return, and a lot of the groundwork is set for trades that will be made right up until the trading deadline without waivers. They're going to be set, and they're going to be talked about here at the All-Star game. So I think for that part, for the executives in the game, it's not going to be any type of time off for them. Yeah, they're going to go, and they're going to enjoy it, but they're going as a front office group to be able to exchange ideas with other teams and find out just who you have, who's going to divest themselves of their talent, who's going to add, what are they going to add. And the first domino to fall is going to be the Manny Machado deal. And regardless of what happens with him, there's going to be deals predicated on that trade. And so everybody says that the two leading contenders at this point are Philadelphia and Milwaukee. I don't really know, not being privy to any side of the conversation. I do know that there are some teams that would love to get there. They view Manny Machado as the one piece that can put him over the top. So when he goes, then there's going to be a lot of other players around that have some value to certain teams. Every team is looking for pitching. And the Sox have some guys out of that bullpen that might be desirable for them. I don't know about the gigantic returns you're going to get. You might get some financial freedom, some flexibility. That is one of the things that you might get. I don't think the magnitude of the prospects that came back in the Chris Sale and the Jose Quintana deal, the Adam Eaton deal, the David Robertson deal, I don't think the magnitude of those prospects will come with the guys that the Sox have to offer at this point. But it is interesting to see who's going to acquire and, you know, how it shapes the wild card and eventually the division championship races.
You know, Ricky Renteria, the manager, was asked sort of a difficult question before Sunday's game because of where they are as a franchise. A reporter asked him to grade the season so far at the halfway point. It's not the official halfway, but the All-Star break. And he said, you know, he would probably, the overall results, wins and losses, a D because they've lost a lot. But in terms of effort and things like that, for individual guys, he'd still give it an A. How would Steve Stone grade this White Sox season so far when they are in year one or year two of a rebuild?
Right, it's year two, and, you know, the obvious way to grade anything in a professional sport is to grade the wins and losses. Will you get to the playoffs or won't you? However, that was not the professed mission of this particular White Sox team. This is the rebuilding phase, and in the rebuilding phase, you take a look at the various players that you think are guys that you want to move forward with, and then you also realize how many guys you want to leave in the rearview mirror. And that is the weeding out process that goes into the rebuild, and then you watch and see your young kids and see who develops. The sad part about what's happened for this organization this year is they've had way more injuries than they would have wanted to have. I mean, this year after year is one of those organizations that doesn't have very many consequential injuries, and yet this year we've seen a whole lot. We've seen a lot to Lewis Robert. He's had a couple of them. Eloy Jimenez has had a couple of injuries. We've had Dane Dunning go down. That's a serious injury. Jake Berger had two different Achilles tendon problems, and so he's going to be on a shelf for a while. He's going to miss his 500-some-odd at-bats, and that's the case with a lot of guys. They miss their innings. They miss their at-bats, and so where you'd normally see the progression of this organization to this point, it's been stopped in a lot of areas because of accidents and injuries, which you can't possibly avoid. Maybe it was a Sox turn to go through that, but that has not helped the rebuild. As far as the actual progression this year, I think we've seen some guys who you can make a case for moving forward. I think Moncada as a hitter has certainly, from the left side at least, come of age as a hitter this year. I think we're seeing just the tip of the iceberg as far as his ability is concerned. He's got to shore up the defense, there's no doubt about that. But second base may not be his eventual position. Could very well be that he moves to third base. That's a possibility. And we'll have to see. Less time to think. You're not involved in as many plays. There are not as many responsibilities. The third could very well be that to take advantage of his speed and his bat, they move him to third, at least for the time being. I don't know exactly, and the jury's still out on Tim Anderson. I think we've seen some progress in Tim. I think we've seen some defensive progress in him. And I think we've seen the fact that he can affect the baseball game offensively just with his speed and with his power. So I think he's taken the next step, and I think they like what they see. It's to be determined at what position. I mean, people talk about shortstop, certainly, because he is a shortstop currently, but they also throw out the idea that maybe there's a center field in his future. We don't know about that. We'll have to wait and see. But there are a couple of guys that you would say, you know, these are some of the guys that you would move forward. I know that Collins has done a nice job in the minor leagues, Zach Collins. He very well be the catcher of the future. You have a left-handed power guy with a good eye, who certainly is good enough defensively, that might be the future of the catching position as far as the Sox are concerned. So there are some bright lights. I think the sad part is the injuries, as we talked about, things that, you know, it looks like as an organization it was the White Sox turn this year.
Yeah, well, and you just hope because, you know, you mentioned two guys, Luis Robert and Eloy Jimenez, that the Sox fans have such incredibly high hopes for. It's just you just want to make sure that they stay healthy, that this is not a chronic kind of problem. I want to go back to the All-Star game for a second because sure. You were an All-Star. When you get back mm-hmm. to your team after these couple days when these teams reconfigure on Friday, are you treated differently by the team, or they make fun of you? What goes on there?
No, I think that just about everybody realizes that it is a great honor to be at the All-Star game. Now, we're seeing a whole lot of guys due to injury and a number of other things that are not able to perform in the game, and they do ask out, and they're replaced by people. It doesn't, for the people who are replacing these guys who were voted in either by the players or the fans, it doesn't diminish their All-Star experience. I think it's just a thrill, personally. I realized that I was just borrowing greatness for a short period of time, and I thoroughly enjoyed everything that went on at the All-Star game. We'll never forget it. It was, to this point, the only All-Star game ever played at Dodger Stadium, and it was just a thrill. And the fact that I got a chance to start it was, for me, even a more special event. I was able to have my parents at the All-Star game. I flew them from Cleveland to Los Angeles, and they were there. They were in the stands at the time. And so for me, it was great to have them there. I wound up throwing three perfect innings in the All-Star game as a starting pitcher, something that won't ever be done again because they're not going to let the starter go three innings.
Exactly. You're lucky to get three pitches. Yeah.
Yeah. It allowed my parents to see the fruits of their labors, the fact that they took the time to take me to these practices.
Right. It's a great
all
thing.
The time.
Yeah,
and you know, it was just wonderful to see them there, to see the looks on their face after I was walking off, because they're the first people that I went to locate in the stands as I came off after my third inning of work. And then we went to dinner that night. It was just a wonderful experience, and I got to share it with the people who made the effort to get me to that point, because without them, without what they did for me, I'd have never been an All-Star. I'd have never been a professional player. It was the sacrifices that they make, both from a financial standpoint and from a time standpoint, that allowed me to do it. And so that was part of the experience. That was one of the thrills for me.
Hardest working parents in all of show business are baseball and hockey parents because of the travel schedules.
Oh, yeah.
And there's so many of them. Obviously, there's the specialties like, you know, gymnastics and figure skating
sure.
stuff. But I, you know, just in general.
Any of the traveling sports, really.
Yeah.
Super, just commitment
super
from
hard.
The entire family.
Yeah. Yeah. And the car smells a little bit better with your baseball player than it does with your hockey player.
Yeah.
But not much. Not much. Get your fresh wave. Get your fresh wave right here. All right, Steve. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
enjoy
Steve.
Your week off.
Well, take care and have a good rest of the show. And I will talk to you guys down the road.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Steve Stone, right there. Your Chicago White Sox broadcaster. No big deal.
Good stories.
Nationals Park, by the way, surprisingly half decent pizza. in the concessions. You wouldn't think that D.C. and pizza, but yeah, when I was out there, I was eating a lot of pizza.
It's great food in D.C., and half of it is from Chicago.
They steal everything over there?
Yeah.
It sort of felt that way.
They have an RPM Italian there.
Do they?
They opened up an RPM.
Really? Most of what I ate out in D.C. was delicious. I had nothing but good grub out there.
Yeah, they've done you know what? Because the lobbyists got to eat.
Right, right. Everybody's
and they've
flying
got fat
in from all over.
To pay for it.
Right, everybody's got dough.
Yeah.
Didn't we try to send you into the window? Who was I trying to send
you? You wanted
into,
me to go to Trump, but it ended up being like a 5-hour game for Cubs and Nationals.
Yeah.
So by the time I got out of the ballpark, everything was closed.
I want you to have the $30 martini at the Trump hotel.
It is really something when you can basically see the White House from the Trump hotel.
Yeah.
It's like,
right.
It's just weird.
That's right. I know they've been planning that for a year. That's, you know, they've been building that. It's the old post office headquarters. And so that's what they were.
Gotcha.
And they made that into this hotel. And so he's been doing this for years. I don't think he ever thought he was going to be president when he started this old thing.
Just,
but the fact that he is.
You see the White House, and then your cab makes a right, and you go east, and you're like, hey, there's the president's name on a building right there.
Yeah.
Two blocks from the White House.
How was the $30 martini?
I didn't have a chance to because.
You had one, Ro?
Oh, no.
Oh, I thought
no.
you. I thought because
you need
went
someone
to
go.
Yeah.
I'll go.
I'm not going by myself.
I'll go.
Me
I'll
and
go
Roger Stone sitting there having a $30 martini. I don't know how that's going to work.
Get in trouble.
Yeah.
Fast.
Although I would listen, I'm not above that. I have done that a number of times. How much for this? Okay.
It must be the one that comes in the shaker, so you get like a martini and a half.
The executive. That's the way they used to call that at the Coke Door Room at the Drake Hotel. Another place where I met Roger Stone when we met with Russians in the 1970s. I was 12.